My initial reaction is, oh, good, they are going to start working on some pretty serious labor issues early. But the skeptic in me kind of looked at it and thought, God, they must be really worried that you know, we're dealing with some serious economic issues here for them to essentially be opening the CBA, more than 2 years ahead of time. How do you read this? We'll talk about the rules changes later, but how do you read the decision about the CBA?
Yeah, let's start with that. First of all, they're not legally opening the CBA. What they agreed to is that they're going to start discussions on some of the issues that are really impacting the sport. And that means from the player standpoint, they want to talk about the economic issues. From the owner standpoint, they want to figure out how not to have a work stoppage.
Okay.
So what they really agreed to do is to negotiate union against management and try to get a deal before the current CBA expires. And what the owners are probably willing to do to avoid a work stoppage after this expires, the current agreement in 21, is they're willing maybe to implement some of the changes that would occur in the next agreement to implement them earlier as an incentive to get a new agreement done faster. Because normally, Jeff, these things happen at the last minute, and they're trying to avoid that.
Yeah, and you know we've those of us have been around the game for a long time. We grew up sort of dreading the beginning of negotiations. I mean, the past couple of negotiations, at least publicly, and this, David, this may be a product of the people doing the negotiating more than the issues, but the last couple of negotiations, have been relatively smooth. There was some drama around the last one, but God, I can remember. If I'm not mistaken, a couple of years ago, the announcement of a new CBA, not this CBA, but the one before, just kind of came at the World Series. It was, oh, by the way, let you guys know that we've got an agreement. which was like that
yeah,
never used to.
There's a lot that goes on, Jeff, behind the scenes. You're talking about back in the day, right? There hasn't been a stoppage since 94, and you were talking about Donald Fehr and Eugene Orza and people who were really interested in making a spectacle and a scene. And it just became a big issue. You had owners fighting amongst each other, large markets versus small markets. And that's what Commissioner Mansell wants to avoid. He wants to keep the owners in line. Tony Clark wants to keep his players in line, all his constituents, the pitchers, the hitters, the young guys, the old guys. But more importantly, Jeff, they realize that the fans and the paying public and the sponsors and the gamblers do not want a work stoppage. They don't care about fights between billionaires and millionaires. And so baseball's being smart, trying to be proactive.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I was talking to someone yesterday about it, and they said, look, all this talk about Major League Baseball wanting to tap into legalized gambling, the new thought process about gambling in the U.S., his point was, Jeff, if you don't have games, you're not going to get any of the gambling revenue, and we were laughing because he said, who the hell knew legalized gambling could actually be something that might force labor, or help enforce labor peace in Major League Baseball. And I hadn't thought of it that way.
It's not just the gambling revenue. It's also the fact that one player actually said that we may strike during the season. And I laughed at that. No players walk out during their paycheck, and players only get paid during the course of the regular season. But with all the money that the players are making, with all the money that the owners have invested in their assets and the value of the asset, there's just no one wants a work stoppage. However, both sides recognize that compromises will have to be made to avoid a work stoppage, which is why they're starting earlier with these discussions. I think it's a great idea.
So, David, it seems to me that what we're talking about here eventually is trying to figure out a way that younger players get paid earlier in a manner that will keep them happy, older players happy, and owners happy. How do you get there? Are we talking maybe,
right,
do we have to start talking about salary caps and restricted free agency versus unrestricted free agency?
No, I think from the union standpoint, they're going to try to get the minimum salary, which when I started in baseball 18 years ago was, a couple hundred thousand dollars. It's already up to $500,000, $530,000. I think you're going to see the minimum salary go up significantly, which is a huge concession by the owners because so many players do play at the minimum. So raising the minimum will matter. I also think you're going to see changes in the arbitration system, which doesn't help the player, doesn't help the owner. You're sitting in a room in front of an arbitrator telling an arbitrator that your employee isn't good. The employee has to hear it. There's just nothing positive about it. So I think you're going to see some more formal changes to arbitration. Also, the manipulation of service time, which is clearly what we did, what every team does, what your current team, the Blue Jays, are doing. It's totally within the rules and normal. I think you're going to see changes around service time. Those are where I think you're going to see. You're not going to see a salary cap or a salary floor. I don't think that that is possible. And from the union standpoint, that's not really what they're interested in. They want to make sure that the young guys are getting paid because they recognize that older players just aren't as good. And they've got to recognize that the younger players are in their prime, younger, and you got to get those guys paid.
Hey, David, when you guys were making decisions, we've always sort of, I think, operated under the assumption that every owner in every sport wants a salary cap because it'll help them make more money. But there's revenues being generated at a record pace in baseball. Were there always a faction of owners that absolutely wanted a salary cap in every negotiation, or were they a little more nuanced than a lot of us in the media, sometimes think?
Yeah, it was way more nuanced. We would never sit in a negotiation amongst the owners, and there'd be three or four owners standing up to say, let's do a salary cap. It's a much more complicated issue when you're doing bargaining, because you've got to figure out if you're going to get something like a salary cap, what do you have to give? And in order to have a salary cap, you have to have a salary floor. And there are way more teams closer to the floor always than they would be to the cap. And that's the case now. Way more teams are well below the luxury tax threshold than at it. So that was never something that we were focused on as an ownership group. What we were focused on were the little things that would add up and really have an impact, believe it or not, like the minimum salary and like service time, like the maximum number of players on the roster. Big change that happened this year that no one's talking about. Going from 25 to 26 players, you are adding 30 jobs if you're the union. And from the owner's standpoint, you are paying for an extra player. And the argument is for at least 15 of the teams, that extra player will not be a minimum player. So that's a significant change. The DH change that could come is a significant advantage to the union, because the 25th man on a roster is generally the minimum, but all National League teams will now have to get a DH, and the average salary of the DH is well higher than a minimum player. So all these things add up, and that's how you get to an agreement when you try to see which side has the, it's got to be more equal for each side.
David, and I know we've talked about this, and I've heard you talk about it elsewhere as well, but, as we take kind of a deeper dive into pace of play and put more things on the table, as someone who watched the game, as someone who's owned a team and run a team, what do you think needs to be done? I mean, David Sampson's perfect world, what would you change about the game, the on-field product? Let's leave aside the business, but the on-field product. What used to drive you nuts is you sat there and watched every game. And what do you think are some realistic changes that could be made to the game?
Well, let's start realistic. I love what we've done with mound visits because it used to make me crazy. I love what we're doing with this three-batter minimum, even though we'll not have as big an impact as you think. I love that we changed the intentional walk. These are all little things that just keep the game moving. What I didn't like were all the pauses and the action. I'm okay with a three-and-a-half-hour game if there's stuff going on. I don't like a three-and-a-half-hour game where it seems as though there's no action. So in our committee, the competition committee, we would call it pace of action, not pace of play, because we're craving action. Why? Because we have to appeal to a younger demographic, all of whom are basically on medicine for ADD, all of whom are clicking to different channels and looking at their phones at every possible minute. So lowering the commercial breaks, which is happening this year, no one's talking about that, Jeff. That's very important, because it doesn't give people a chance to turn the channel. And in this society, everyone's turning channels every minute. So we've got to find a way to keep people focused on the game of baseball, make it more fun.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I remember having a discussion with Curtis Granderson last year here in spring training after Tony Clark made his visit. And one of the things Curtis said is, I don't know why they can't, do a split-screen thing and have ads, you know, during the changeover in innings and save time there, or do, you know, do what soccer does. Right? There are no ads, but NBC, SN in the States, they'll run an ad across the top of the screen, you know, while the action's going on. And to me, as a, you know, as a sports consumer, they, I notice that more than I do a commercial. A commercial comes, I'm going to go get a cup of coffee or something like that.
Because you're at the refrigerator, right? You're going
to
getting food. It's actually impactful. I've spoken to advertisers about this, Jeff, and they actually would rather have their advertisements on the split screen because they recognize that it's DVR proof. When you have a commercial happening contemporaneously with the game. And I think the other things that are not as realistic, but that I've written about or that I spoke to Jason Stark about, I want to see changes on the field. I want to see the long 18-inning games disappear by having runners start on base in extra innings. I love the ability to potentially bat out of order once a game or to have your star player. One thing that baseball doesn't have, and it's very controversial, I'll grant you, but I love it, in every other sport, the superstar gets the ball at the end of the game to win or lose. I would love it if in baseball, one time per game, you could put up to bat whoever you wanted, no matter what the batting order was. It's not that big a deal. And it would. Can you imagine the excitement if in New York, Giancarlo Stanton or Aaron Judge could bat twice in the ninth inning down one run? I think that changes a lot of the excitement. It would be must-see TV.
Oh, I would. I mean, that's a rule change. I would be. I mean, I can hear heads exploding all over the place. But
they are. But I love that. Why not have a conversation? If you're going to do something where heads aren't exploding, then the fact is you're not doing anything.